Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Over the past few years, sports and racial justice have intersected and at times collided over and over again. They have inspired unity and caused polarization, depending on where you stand on those issues. And tonight, we engage in conversation with a national nonprofit hoping to do more than just engage in conversation about race and racism in sports. Coaches Versus Racism is working to do something about it. And joining me to talk about it tonight are Daryl Woods, Executive Director of Coaches Versus Racism, and Capriana Jenkins, PhD student studying communication, culture, and media studies here at Howard University. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this issue, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Capriana and Daryl, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So, Daryl, let me start with you. What was the genesis of this idea of Coaches Versus Racism?
Well, I think in the beginning, you know, there were a ton of conversations that me and my former college teammates had pre-George Floyd, pre-COVID, obviously. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about in length is how can we, through sports, affect the lives of, you know, the next generation, okay? And there was other topics that have come up that was actually on the table at the time. But post-George Floyd and obviously and dealing with COVID, other issues have come up. So we decided to, you know, have conversations and try to figure out how to bridge the racial divide through sports. Mm-hmm. And some of the topics with that, you know, if you're talking social injustice, equality, you know, the economic divide, reform, systemic racism, all those things matter to people, right? And so we just wanted to have some positive conversation and lead those conversations in the right direction, and then on top of that, not just have the conversation, but figure out what sort of actions that we could take to help, and not just in sports, but just in society in general.
Mm-hmm. Why coaches?
Well, you know that's a really good question, Harold, and my answer is always been the same: is that whether you play sports or not, growing up as a kid, you know, infant, we've all had some sort of coach, whether it's your mom, your dad, your uncle, your aunt, teachers, or whatnot. And those are your first coaches, whether you know it or not, okay? Because they're the ones that are teaching you right from wrong and, you know, those sort of things. But coaches, in a nutshell, we just felt like everything that coaches bring to the table in terms of being great motivators, innovators, leaders in our community and dealing with our youth was the perfect person to help us spread our messaging across the across the globe.
Capriana, what is your take on this movement? Is this a grassroots movement from your perspective as a, and correct me if I'm wrong, as a race scholar, is that an accurate depiction of the kind of work, first of all, that you're doing? And considering where we are, specifically where race and sports and racism in sports intersect, do you believe that this is a grassroots movement or is this a top-down movement?
I believe that it's kind of both. We're seeing that a lot of people are starting to speak out and talk about this from the grassroots, but we actually need a top-down movement. We can only do so much, those of us who are considered to be like the athletes, the people who are on social media talking about it, but what we need are the coaches. What we need are the people who are in charge of these organizations and make the rules to actually speak up, because that's where the real change starts. So I see it as both.
Let me challenge you somewhat, Daryl, on this. You said something that struck me. You said that this matters to people. To whom does this matter? Does it matter to people of color? Who are the people, when it comes to sports, are probably the people who are least in power? And when did this really start to matter? And more to the point, is it more symbolic now with the statements on the backs of football helmets, for, you know, as a matter of fact, that we now see? Or do we really begin to see, or how do we really begin to see real change, and what does that look like?
Well, I think those are, well, number one, I think that's a really good question. And from our standpoint and from my standpoint, you know, we know that it matters to this generation. Right, we know that, and it's not just people of color, because if you look at the protests that were going on, there were probably more. I can't say more, but there's just as many, according to the television set, as just as many white kids than there were, you know, kids of color in this generation. And our take on this, Harold, is look, this is not a new concept,
right?
But our goal is to not let the narrative die, right? We've been through other instances where things have happened in the past, and after a period of time, you know, everyone goes back to their jobs and kind of forget what happens. Maybe not forget, but you know, they take the foot off the gas pedal, so to speak, right? In terms of the pressing issues. So, you know, so what we're charged with is, you know, and given the platform that we're giving, we want to keep the narrative alive, for those that are aspiring to be, you know, liberating and to provide awareness in their communities. And we just feel like it's the next generation. You know, I was born in the 60s, okay? And, but I have kids that are millennials, and their ideas are different, but one and the same of ours, but they approach it a little different, okay? And from where I'm sitting, you know, I think it's time for, you know, and I can go 50 and up in terms of age, for the old guys to, you know, support the millennials, support the younger generation, give them the knowledge that we have and the things that we've been through, and let's see what they can do with some of the issues that are in front of us, because I think they're ready.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about coaches versus racism, a movement to confront racism in sports at all levels, from the grassroots, from the youngest all the way up to the professional level. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Capriotta, since you are about closer to that age, are you concerned at all about having the same kind of critical race theory pushback for those who would be against this kind of movement, like we're seeing in school boards and the like? I mean, we're still trying to, there are some of us, myself included, who would still hope to see a Colin Kaepernick back on the gridiron throwing the ball around. You know, he says himself that he is still keeping up with his workouts, and he would, and we would hope that he would not be the sacrificial lamb of this issue about racism in sports. And yet, it appears so far that he has been. What are your thoughts about those kinds of discussions about those people for whom this issue does not matter, and they just want folks to keep dribbling and just play ball and not talk about race?
Right, because if we talk about it, then we're exposing them. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely sad that those who are in power or who are not on the receiving end of these issues want to hide it, because, you know, they would then be exposed. But it takes people like Colin Kaepernick to talk about it. Unfortunately, it also has to be recognized that you kind of come from a place of privilege when you are able to talk about it, and it doesn't affect you in a way where you might not lose everything. So Colin Kaepernick, of course, did lose a lot, but he does have some type of backing, I'm assuming money or something he can fall back on. But when you're a student at a university who's riding on this scholarship, you might not be able to speak up in the ways that you want to, because you don't want to lose your scholarship. You know, you might not have that privilege. So it does take those people in power who understand these issues, like the coaches, like the school board, to speak up for these kids. One, providing them a safe space to talk about it, and two, backing them up, talking to the NCAA and all of those organizations. So those who believe that this is an issue have to speak up for the younger generation and help them.
So, Daryl, from your perspective, from the perspective of this organization, how is this supposed to work? What's the strategic plan for moving this issue forward? To, you know, who are your allies, and what are the challenges for getting this off the ground and moving it forward?
Right. Well, I think first I do want to comment on what Ms. Jenkins said, because it's very important that we understand that point of view in terms of it's two things here. One is privilege to be able to speak out and not be worried about what the backlash will be. And then, you know, the economics of it all, you know, and it brings up a very valid point in terms of having the economic divide be front and center here. And it's all based on, you know, words. You know, Colin, was able to come out and take a really hard stand, just like Ms. Jenkins said, because he's in a position where, you know, and he used his platform to something that he really believed in. But the ordinary person without those sort of resources would not be able to recover, you know, not that he's fully recovered, because I know he still wants to play football, but just from an economic standpoint, it makes a big difference. And I think people that are in those positions really need to take a hard look at that. Okay, because it's really important. Okay, so I just wanted to comment on that, and mm-hmm. I'm glad Ms. Jenkins brought that point up, because sometimes we overlook the impact of how economics affect our decision making in our community.
Absolutely. Some, as you said, and as she said, sometimes you can't just get up and walk away. And that includes, in some cases, multi-million dollar professional athletes. They have to balance the career that they have fought for and practiced for and sacrificed for all of their lives. And coaches, the same thing. Those coaches that they, you know, that they have studied, they have trained, and now they have the specter of racism has been presented to them, and how are they going to react, and how are they going to speak up? Are they going to certainly do the right thing? Or, as we have seen, you know, no matter what color you happen to be, when this was, you know, when your past catches up with you, John Gruden, whether or not you have to pay, you have to end up paying a price for racism, misogyny, homophobia, and all of these others, and dare I say, the chickens do come home to roost for a lot of people, and I think there is a lesson to be learned there. You could very well argue that maybe 10 years ago, John Gruden may not have been fired if these things had come to light. I need to take a break. I want to finish up on that particular point, and then I want to ask you some more questions. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Coaches versus racism. What do you think? Lines are open. Give us a call. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, the app. Don't forget to download it to your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Also, don't forget 98.3 FM. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about coaches versus racism. It is not just an organization, but it is also a movement addressing the intersection of race and racism in sports. My guests are Darryl Woods, the executive director of Coaches versus Racism, and Capriana Jenkins, PhD student studying communication, culture, and media studies here at Howard University. If you have comments or questions about this issue, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So as I asked before, I wanted to know what is the plan for addressing this, you know, beyond just the conversation. What is the call to action, Darryl?
Right. So I guess what we're charged with here, Harold, is, you know, well, number one, we want to use our platform, okay, for the voices that were typically afraid to be voiced. Okay, and a lot of times, although coaches are very strong individuals, very confident, they still have a job to do, especially at the university level, right? And sometimes, you know, they may see things and may not be able to voice those feelings. Okay, and up until recently, especially with pre you know, post George Floyd, when the student athletes decided to take stands in all major markets, then I think the coaches had an opportunity to take a step forward, okay, and support the student athletes. And that's not just basketball. That's all sports, football and soccer, tennis, just across the board. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to provide, you know, the platform and present, you know, an opportunity to leverage the awareness that people are not educated properly on some of the things that, you know, that are given to them in terms of being privileged. Okay. And, you know, that's one of the topics that I keep hearing about, and one of the topics that, you know, we touched on a little bit with Ms. Jenkins. But our platform that we've been given, like I said before, is to provide awareness and education for the next generation and to arm them with as much knowledge as possible to take plan of action in terms of whether it's policy making. One of the biggest reasons why we had this inaugural game in D.C.
What inaugural game are you talking about? For those who are not, help me, you know, for the people in the back
who are not familiar,
tell me what you're talking about.
All right. So the people are not familiar. So this Saturday, November 13th, 8 p.m., nationally televised game, University of Michigan playing Prairie View A&M University. So we have an HBCU versus a Power Five conference school in Michigan going head to head. So it's HBCU, you know, it has been billed as this. It's not just me. It's HBCU versus Power Five, right? And the idea is to not just have this be a one-off game, but to model this after, you know, coaches versus cancer. Because we feel like racism is a disease, you know, unlike just some of cancer. Okay, and how do we eradicate that? Okay, those are the questions that are put before us, and we don't have all the answers. Okay, so we need help. We need allies, you know, coaches and other CEOs of companies and Fortune 500 guys and other sports enthusiasts and you know, influencers to start having meaningful conversations, man, on how can we, you know, have a better place to live in and eradicate this disease that we call, you know, that we know is racism. 'Cause it exists whether we want to talk about it or not. It does exist.
Capriana, do you believe that Black women may have a special role in a movement like this? And if so, what might that role be?
Definitely, we've historically seen the contributions Black women have made to any movement. And in sport especially, we have to not only acknowledge race, but we have to acknowledge gender. And when you are a Black female athlete, you have the intersection of being both Black and female and marginalized on both ends. And so we have to make sure that we're not leaving Black female athletes behind when we're trying to get, you know, better rights or whatever it may be for athletes in general. For instance, with the Title IX, that was supposed to help women, but research has shown that it did not help a lot of Black women as much as it did white women because access to certain facilities, you know, when you're in high school, there might not be a lot of Black female athletes who can participate in sports such as tennis or sports such as soccer just because of access to facilities. So having Black women in the spaces that can speak up for Black female athletes definitely helps so they won't be left behind.
To that point, do you do black women, do you have to groom the champions to speak up and speak out? Do the Coaches Versus Racism organizations have to begin to reach out to those high profile black women who begin to separate themselves from the pack athletically? And, you know, is that how this might work? Because, and the reason I ask this, because, and I don't think this is a stretch, but this really is the time, you know, for women right now, whether they are running for Congress or for school board or county council or city council or for mayor, they continue to excel. They continue to shine, whether it is on, you know, on the athletic field, on the track, and people are, I believe, listening to women and particularly black women. And I think as you suggested, yes, those are the voices that need to be heard. And so does there need to be a more organized movement to pull them up and say, hey, we need you as a voice, do we need to pull up the Serena Williams, and others to speak up? I mean, I just throw out that name. I mean, obviously she's a well-established, person, and she has been speaking up as it relates to women's health, but she could very well speak up in reference to racism. But for, up and coming, black athletes, should there be a more organized movement, just like Coaches Versus Racism, to have the voices of black women raised in this issue?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Capriana,
I believe in... Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead. I wanted to answer a little bit of that with Harold was saying, because I know you answered it a little bit beforehand, okay. If you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
So Harold, that's a really good point, really good question, and I'm just speaking from Coaches Versus Racism standpoint. Mm-hmm. There's other organizations out here that are really doing some great work. There's others that could be doing more for women and black women in particular. And so what we have identified, even this has been our first year, that, and you mentioned Title IX, Ms. Jenkins there, and what we're going to do next year is, this has never been done. So everything we want to do, we want to try to make it impactful, right? So I don't know if you guys know this, but next year, 2022, is the 50th anniversary of Title IX. So what we want to do is not, and it's not just about the 50th anniversary, again, going forward and not have, we want to get away from doing one-off activities is what we call them. Okay, and then everyone goes back to doing the same thing. We want to get away from that because we have to have it fresh in your mind and remember where we've been in order to move forward, right? So what we want to do next year is something that's never been done and have a women college basketball game along with the men's basketball game all in the same tournament, and as it relates to Title IX and celebration of Title IX, and then move that train forward. And we felt like, and I've been dealing with, we've been dealing with in sports in general, the women has always had taken a back seat in terms of the number of shoes they're getting, the number of uniforms, the amount of money that they get in a contract. There's just so many things on and on and on and on. So what we wanted to try and do is change that narrative and have everything be on an equal playing field through sport and our platform, the things that we can control, and then hopefully other people will see what we're doing and the work that we're doing and kind of copy that and model that after what we're trying to do as an example.
What is the measurement of success, Darryl, for you?
Well, for me as an individual, for CVR.
No, for the organization.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I think for us, if we can touch the folks that we really need to touch, and what I'm saying by that is not that this is not a quote unquote organization where we want to huddle up with all Black people, okay, or all people of color, okay. We need our other nationalities, whether it's white or and others, to come on board and work together. Because the one thing that we know that we did not create racism. Black people did not create that. So it's very difficult to eradicate and get rid of something that you did not create because you don't have the code. You know, so how do we break that code is we have to have other people involved. Okay? We have to have other people involved. And that's the bottom line. You know, and what our measurement of success will be, you know, how many people that we've touched to open up their hearts to say, hey, yeah, you know, racism is wrong. We recognize that. Okay, what can we do to make it better and have a plan of action behind that? And it's not just giving money. It's not that those sort of things all the time. It's not materialistic. It's just coming in and being sincere about what can we do to eradicate this disease.
But isn't exactly, I understand that, but isn't that more hearts and minds? Because if I'm not a big sports person, but I would like to think, having been I'm a graduate of an HBCU, if I want to study and understand the intricacies of racism, yeah, well, I would believe that the brain trusts of understanding the history of racism would be found, you know, at HBCUs, which is why we have, you know, race women like, you know, the Capriata Jenkins of the world right now.
Right.
But I wouldn't go to an HBCU to change hearts and minds. I would go to Michigan to change hearts and minds. I would go to Harvard. I would go to Yale. I would go to the University of Maryland or the University of Miami or any of these other places. Something to think about. I want to talk about on the other end. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. We continue our conversation about coaches versus racism. Okay, so before the break, I was talking about Darryl and Capriata about how to address this issue of coaches versus racism. And I was challenging you about, where do you go to address this issue? And I said, yes, you would go to perhaps Michigan and to Yale and Harvard and to non-HBCUs to address this issue. But I challenge you again, because during the break, Darryl, you got to help me, because you're going to have Prairie View A&M, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to play Michigan. So you're going to have an HBCU basketball team where it's a Black basketball team.
Right.
Play the Michigan Wolverines. You know, that's a Black basketball team.
Yeah. The team is, but the coach is.
The university is
predominantly white.
So the reason, and I say this half jokingly, but
I know you are.
But So, what's the lesson in bringing these kind of schools together? Because that's what I'm trying to get at.
Right. So, again, and this is strategically planned, and part of our mission is to integrate, right? Fully integrate. Okay. And, you know, I think going back to one of the previous questions that you had, is I think we have to get to a point where the education is authentic and true, okay, in terms of our history. And through sports, okay, we have to try to understand why people think the way they do. Like, you know, why, you know, if you have a kid, you tell them 30 times, hey, don't touch the stove, it's hot. Why did he continue to do that? Okay. And so, I mean, that's the challenge of, you know, in racism. You know, why do people that are racist, why are they racist? There's a reason behind that. You're not born that way. Okay. So we have another arm with Coaches Versus Racism that we call emotional fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And emotional fitness ties in sports and society. Okay. In a lot of different ways. Okay. It's more towards sports because that's our platform and that's what we know. But it really ties in the emotional aspect of why people are the way they are. Okay. And we try to and educate and have meaningful conversations through our panels and our panel discussions and symposiums and whatnot about how to have meaningful dialogue, and then from the dialogue, how do we plan actions, you know, to help us with our messaging and to help us eradicate, again, I'll keep using eradicate a ton tonight, but eradicate the disease. Okay, so with emotional fitness, sports, and society, we have to understand the why people are the way they are, and once we understand that, I think we're going in the right direction.
Capriana, is integration 2022? Is that a possible solution from your perspective?
It really just depends on who you're talking to. If it's someone who is already embedded in their thoughts, I don't really see too much progress, but I do believe that there are those who are ignorant, and to have someone to give them the statistics, the charts, the facts, it could work. For instance, you have Jonathan Bean, who is the NFL's first chief diversity and inclusion officer, and I guess you could say that's a form of integration, but I wonder what he's doing and what is he saying to those people to let them know to change those rules. So it just depends on who's on the receiving end of that.
If not that, Capriana, what would you recommend?
I think that's the question. I was trying to answer that because that really is a good question. It's just trying to educate and trying to get the people who already understand to be able to put them in positions of power and use those positions of power to help in the lower tier sections, right? So when we become coaches and when we become the president of these organizations, not falling into what's already been going on, because I believe we feel that pressure to do what already has been going on, so we can keep those positions, but we have to use our privilege to fight against it. But it's a layered answer.
It is, and the reason I asked, and I asked in the way that I did, and I think you make a very valid point, because we are talking about racism versus ignorance. It is one thing for people who do not know or do not necessarily understand versus someone who is well embedded in their racism and who see it as their truth. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Daryl, but that is the thing that you are fighting against. You are truly fighting, not necessarily just against prejudice and ignorance and all, but you are fighting against, you know, good old American racism. The thing that is some would argue that is as American as apple pie and hot dogs with, you know, yellow mustard and relish.
And it, you know, and it comes out at in particular times, just as we see, you know, when you look back at, you know, different, you know, people that are in power, just like you guys mentioned, whether it's an NFL owner, whether it's an NBA owner, whether it's a high level coach, whether it's whoever, a teacher. You see it at different moments. And, you know, the one thing I try to do and what keeps me motivated is that, you know, my grandmother, she was born in the 1920s, right? And she's seen a lot, you know, and I've had, you know, when I was in college, she'd call me. I'd come home and visit with her when we got breaks, when we weren't playing. And one thing that she always told me was, I hope I'm alive to see a black president. Right? That was her thing. I hope I'm alive to see a black president. And she did. Okay? So she got a chance to see Barack, you know, lady from Bells, Tennessee, that, you know, grew up in the 20s that pretty much seen everything from top to bottom when it comes to racism, right? And so what you know, and to piggyback on what she's saying and take some of her analogy is, I hope I'm alive to see the end of racism. You know, and, you know, she didn't think she was going to make it. And then when Barack got, you know, elected, I said, well, come on, you made it, you know, it happened, you know. So, again, I hope I'm alive to see the end of racism. And that's, you know, that would be where, you know, I'd like to hang our hat and use our motto in terms of, you know, hope. Hope is where we live. That's where we live, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. And that's where the energy is coming from.
Well, good luck to you. And I'm not going to say baby steps. I'm going to say great, big, giant steps for you. Capriana Jenkins, thank you so much for sharing your intellect. And good luck with you and your studies. Good things for you also. Daryl Woods, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you guys. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Okay. Hope to see everybody at the game.
That's the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.